From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in a night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, and forever my producer, my brother, my friend, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey, Bob. Yes, here today with you for another episode, a chilling episode of Bob After Dark.
Yes, what is the weekend update from you, Count?
The weekend update, Bob, a lot of, going on, getting some work done, of course. But other than that, pretty calm. As the spring solstice has its hot days and cold days.
Equinox.
Yes. I was a little chilly today, so I had to break out the hoodie. But that could change tomorrow. But, being a vampire, I've seen this weather for millions of years, and it never gets old. The changes, but how about you, Bob?
Mother's Day was Sunday. Yeah, and I got to spend some time with Mom, which was nice. My mom and my brother and I had a decent day out. Mom had a good time, which is obviously topmost importance to me. Everything went really good. Other than that, I've been just kind of hanging out while I wait for more medical stuff.
There you have it. That's all. Waiting is the hardest part, I believe. Tom Petty said that.
I believe so. So if you guys see me kind of wiggling around in the chair again, or I start busting out in the sweats like I did last week, just bear with me. I'm still here.
You have your nurses on site.
I do not this week, but you get the idea.
Okay.
So you and I need to wrap with our radio audience today. So radio fans, this is not going to be... I don't want to say this is the worst news in the entire world, but it's definitely going to be a change.
Yeah.
So Bob After Dark, as we know it, as we've been experiencing it for the past few years, is no longer going to be broadcasted on the radio Tuesday nights.
There's two options here, Bob.
The one option I don't see working in the reality of the grand scheme of things, but let's talk.
Yeah.
Okay. So the station is going through a little bit of changes and a little bit of different an update, right? And that there's nothing wrong with that. Growth happens. And there's going to be a little bit more sports going on rolling into the 9 o'clock hour than we've ever been used to. So what's going to happen right now with me and Count Panic is that we're going to be here on Tuesdays for the foreseeable future. And we're still going to be live on Jed TV. So anybody out there in the entire world can go to JedTV.com and watch me for free on Tuesdays. You can catch the podcast whenever you would like. That's available on demand whenever you have the desire to go and listen to the shows. Those are always available in podcast land. So Jed TV will still be here. We'll still be airing more. We'll be on the TV or web TV, I suppose you could say. Yeah.
TV.
And the radio show will no longer be live, but recorded for a Sunday night. That's the current process we have.
I think that might be the easier option. So the two options we present here, as Bob mentioned, live on Jed TV on Tuesdays. And I know Tuesdays, even sometimes we get wrapped up in Tuesdays, right? I know in June I got a Tuesday that commitment that I might not be able to be here for, but usually Tuesdays is what we aim for, 9 p.m. Tuesday nights. Now, we could still keep it like that, as you said, on the Jed TV, which would be live on the Jed TV, but on WGLB, you might hear a baseball game or some kind of sporting game in that 9 o'clock hour.
Yeah.
Then Sunday night, we're toying with, 8 p.m. or so. We air that broadcast on the radio for the folks on listen to Strictly Radio, WJLB, or the TuneIn app, what have you, or not. So you'll still hear it on the radio, just be a different day and not live, essentially. Now, the other option we were toying around with was still being both at the same time on a Tuesday, but at 10 o'clock, 10 p.m.
That's...
Now, I don't know. That's still, listen, that could be in the realm of possibility. We'll have to discuss that more this week and have an answer with you hopefully by next week, which will still be here on a Tuesday for next week's show before baseball kind of gets cranked up. But that's also on the table as well. So listen, in life, there's things on tables, right? There's many choices on tables. There's options on tables. And anything could go happen, and anything could happen. And there might be more options on tables than we ever had before. So
right.
That's where we're at right now. For the folks listening on WJLB, just a little update of what we're going to be discussing this week.
Yeah.
And healthy hit news for you next week.
Yes. Yeah. So things are going to be different around here. There's no question about that. There's no realm where things are going to be the same. And change is okay. There's nothing wrong with change. It's just going to be different for my radio fans. Podcast fans, this is not going to apply to you guys at all. The podcast fans, as the episodes come out in podcast land, you get them, you listen to them, you love them, they're available.
And we should clarify for folks that do listen on the radio, that maybe never dabbled in the land of podcast, it's as simple as maybe going to your phone or computer and typing in Bob After Dark, right?
Yeah.
And
then you could, I am on YouTube now as well, prepping for the sudden change in things. The YouTube channel does host the brand new podcast, the podcast episodes as soon as they come out as well, just like anywhere else. Apple, Spotify, Bob After Dark. YouTube, search Bob After Dark. The episodes are on there. If you are having trouble finding me, if you are having trouble finding the content, please do not hesitate to email me, bob@bobafterdark.com. You can reach out to me in social media land. Now, the show's not going anywhere. I can promise you that. Like, growth for the show right now is at its biggest it's ever been.
It's a genesis.
It's, you know, I'm doing a lot of cool things with the show these days. The Twitch thing's going really well for us. The Bob After Dark merch store's up and running. You know, I'm looking, doing more cons. You know, TV show eventually is going to hopefully happen. You know, we have things in the works. It's just things here are going to be different.
Yeah.
And it's not like I'm not going to be in the Stragon Van Til Studios doing the show on Tuesday nights. It's just for my radio fans. You guys are going to be listening to some sports program, not me.
Baseball.
Baseball.
Unless you don't learn how to call a baseball game.
I'm trying to think because I'd watch a game with my dad every once in a while. Dad was a big baseball fan, but you get the idea. And so for our radio fans, I would love to hear from you guys tonight. Please call in 219-845-1100, 219-845-1100. I'd love to hear you guys, especially folks that don't have access to Jed TV and stuff. I'd love to hear about your experiences listening to me over the years on the Tuesday night on the radio side.
Clarify it. That is free still, the Jed TV.
Yeah, well, no, 100%. Yeah. You can go on Jed, but some people don't internet count.
Yeah, well, yes.
We have a demographic that listen to the radio that only listen to the radio. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So yeah, I would love to hear from you guys, 219-845-1100. We already have our first caller.
You
know what I'm saying?
Nope.
Caller, you're on the air.
Jeez, oh man, Bob, we might as well go with Bob After Midnight. How about that?
That's the tough part. You know, it's the 10 o'clock hour is an idea. But the problem is booking guests that live on the East Coast. It pushes it now at 10 o'clock trying to get a guest, but trying to get a guest at 11. I'm not coast to coast. I don't have that kind of like ability to be like, hey, person, do you want to stay up till midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning to be on the show? But yeah, no, you get the idea. How's it going, John?
Yeah, pretty good. No, that's a good point. I didn't think about your guest being an hour or so different than we are. But hey, you never know. I mean, but you know what, Bob? I don't care if you're on 1, 2, 3 in the morning. You know, I'm going to be a loyal listener of you.
Thanks, John.
And I'm a radio guy. You know, I get Jed TV. I mean, but I'm just used to listening to you on the radio. But, you know, maybe I'm old-fashioned, too. I don't know. But you know what? You're not gone. You're just, just set back with a different time. That's all.
Yeah, 100%. Right now, we haven't come up with a finalized day time yet, but it looks like it's going to be Sundays when the radio show will be syndicated. Sundays at 9 or 8 p.m.
Maybe 8.
Sunday nights, 8 p.m. will be when Bob After Dark airs on, what'd you call it, like a syndication.
Yeah.
Don't call in on a Sunday night, John. I won't be here.
I mean, you know what? Like you said, Jet TV is free. All you got, you don't even have to download the app if you want. Just Google it on your phone, and it pops right up there. And you got a few other shows there that are Beetle Bits on Wednesday nights and other reruns and stuff like that. So Sunday night might be a pretty good option for people that are listening to something that's not going on a Sunday night.
Strong lineup right there. You got Beatles Bits, the Region Bandstand, and Bob After Dark.
It's a cool thing. So, it's not the end of the world, John. It's just a little different. But thank you for always being a loyal call-in, and I hope that we can still get you to watch the Jed TV for us.
Well, definitely. Like I said, it's not hard to do, so I could definitely do that. So have a good show, Bob.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay.
All John, right there.
John, always a pleasure.
So I got that wrong. It was Polka Hour. Beatles Bits reruns on a Friday. Polka Hour, Region Bandstand would be on the
Sunday. I have listened to the Polka Show on Sundays. I have.
The re-rack is always on Sunday night. I think that might be the 9 o'clock.
Yeah. Especially when Dad was on the end of his time here on Earth, I would tune. Do we have another caller?
Oh, no. I just had to hang up.
Oh, I got you. You're just hanging up on poor John. But no, so that's just a quick update, guys. I just wanted to kind of wrap with you. I just want to give a quick shout out to the new program director here at WJOB, Sonny. Sonny is amazing, and we appreciate him 1,000,000% here. Right, Count?
Yeah, Sonny Santana.
Sonny Santana. I think he's here working on news bits, but we appreciate Sonny, and I just wanted to give a quick shout-out to him for making sure Bob After Dark stays on the air.
I said if he can't fix it, nobody can. But, Bob, in life, options are key, and there's many options here on the table.
Absolutely.
In this realm of the universe.
But the one thing I can tell you, 1,000 trillion billion percent, Bob After Dark is not going anywhere.
The show itself, though.
The show itself.
It changes times, but it's not going.
Yes. So let's move on to what Bob After Dark is. Maybe this is your one time you catch me on a Tuesday,
well,
right?
Hey, and don't forget, Bob, you're making appearances as well left and right.
Yes. We're going to discuss the Saturday one later because I don't know what's going on yet. So that one, check out online for that because we don't know what's going on. Yeah, I know. We'll get to that. Okay, Count. So let's talk about what Bob After Dark is. Yeah. We are your weekly-ish show where we talk about legends, lore, and supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and, of course, Count Panic's favorite episode of Bob After Dark he's ever recorded.
Ah, it's got to be the Yule Cat, right?
Or the Nessie yes.
one? Could be the Nessie one. Or the Man-Eating Gourd. There's again back to options. There's lots of options here.
Yep.
What's your favorite?
I will always have a soft spot for interviewing Bishop Long.
Okay. Yeah.
Bishop James Long, the gentleman who worked with certain paranormal investigator. Sorry, guys, I got a skin. Paranormal investigator with the black frame glasses. He was a very he was one of the most interesting guests I've ever recorded, and he is absolutely wonderful, and I adore him tremendously. Sorry, guys, I'm only standing because sitting down here in this chair is giving me some.
Again.
Yeah, it's the stool. I told myself I was gonna bring some lumbar support and lower area support, so it's a little bit more cushion, so I'm not feeling the pressure on my abdomen as much. But no big deal. I could stand and sit. Just bear with me if you hear me. If you see me, don't panic. Or if you see me pouring sweat, please don't panic. I'm okay.
We won't call, don't call 911 just yet.
No. So, are you ready to, so we split up in the show into the two parts. The first part of the show is the weird spooky news of the week. That's where you, the fans, and me, the Bob, go scouring the internet for the weird, the interesting, the unusual, the strange news stories that are brought to us every day. Anything from paranormal getting spotted, UFOs getting photos taken of them, or weird advances that borderline on science fiction. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I have two breaking news stories for you. And two of them are from Tim Banal. So Tim Banal, Coast to Coast AM's got most of our news stories this week. I got four of them for you because there's some interesting ones, to say the least. So are you ready to dive into the news stories? We get the hashtag Panic's Take. That's where Count Panic gives us his opinion on the news stories, because I don't normally prep him for that, so you guys get the raw opinion on that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you get the, after that, is the right from the pages of Dr. Ben Vanderson, the lore of the week.
Simple as that.
Absolutely. All right, Count, you ready to dive in?
Let's dive in. I got my scuba gear on.
All right, so do you remember, this is the weirdest story to ever have a follow-up in Bob After Dark history.
Okay.
Do you remember some time ago we covered the serial cat shaver in England?
I remember that. I remember that story.
So what if I was to tell you that the cat shaver struck again? Now, the cat's not hurt. They just shave a patch of fur off of it.
That's horrible, Bob.
All right. So the serial cat shaver strikes again. Thank you, Tim Banal. I love and appreciate you, pal. A serial cat shaver in England has struck again as an unfortunate tabby named Twinkle recently just lost the patch of fur to the shaver-wielding miscreant. Shear-wielding miscreant. That's a lot of words. The latest case of the curious crime spree that has kept the British animal lovers on edge for the last several years happened last month in a community of Foleshill, and was revealed this week when the feline's owner, Lucy O'Donoghue, detailed the incident to the local media outlet. Initially bewildered by the discovery that Twinkle had seemingly been shaved, she had been charged when her suspicions were confirmed by a visit to the pet groomer, who told her such an incident had been occurring in the area since 2021, though this case is the first time that it's unfolded in Foleshill. With the cat shaver seemingly on the move, O'Donoghue have felt compelled to come forward with her story that pet owners in her community could be on guard for the near-doer. Observing that Twinkle is not really a people person and does not go to strangers, she was mystified as to how the troublemakers got near her, let alone held her down to do it. Echoing many other cat owners who have seen their pet beloved pet ones fall victim to the shaver over the years, she muses that it is bizarre, but also really sinister, because if someone could do that, what else are they capable of? While it remains to be seen if the reprobate owl will strike again in the community, folks in Foleshill would be wise to keep an eye on their favorite feline with a phantom on the prowl. I am going to reiterate this. No cat has been harmed other than the patch of fur that's been shaved.
Yeah.
So no, but this is just generally strange, because I remember covering this, and this story literally broke an hour before the show.
Yeah.
So hashtag Panic's Take.
I was going to say, who says the show doesn't give us breaking news, Bob?
I break news, man.
Break the news. Now, this is, again, I'm glad no cats were harmed, and, you know, we can go deep in the weeds with this one, but I'll just say I'm glad no cats were harmed during this. Before I say anything that might get us yanked off the air here sooner. But you know what? The cat is fine, right?
Yes, the cat is fine. Just patch of fur missing.
Perfect.
All right. So this next news story comes to us from an interesting source. And this is also breaking news.
Yeah, more breaking news.
This is from the National Catholic Reporter.
Catholic Reporter?
I never in a million years thought I'd be bringing you an article from this, but it's... It's definitely a thing. Vatican is to publish updated norms for investigated alleged apparitions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is from Vatican City. The author is... Nope. Oh, Cindy Wooden. Sorry. They have that written so weird, Ms. Wooden, and I apologize. The Dicasty for the Doctrine of Faith published its new norms for the discernment of apparitions and other supernatural phenomena on May 17th, the Vatican Press Office said, as of today, which is, what's today's date? It is
14th.
So on May 17th, they will be releasing these new the new discernment for apparitions and supernatural phenomena. Hmm. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get a hold of this, but let's move on. The last time the Vatican's doctoral official issued norms for evaluating alleged apparitions and reports for supernatural was way back in February 1978. At the time, the prefect, Cardinal Frejo Sepper, said the norms were necessarily given how news of alleged apparitions spread rapidly thanks to mass media. Moreover, the ease of going from one place to another forced frequent pilgrimages so that the Ecclesiastical celestial authority should discern quickly about the merits of such matters, he wrote. In an interview with OSV News in February, Fernandez said, given increasing reports of spiritual, psychological, and sexual abuse tied to false mysticism, it would certainly be necessary to include some considerations related to the special gravity of these risks in the document of evaluating presumed apparitions and other supernatural occurrences. The Vatican's 1978 rules entrust to the local bishop to the initial elevation of the alleged apparitions of Mary weeping statues or supposed messages from God, Marys, or saints. The thing to look for, it is said, are true theological and spiritual doctrine, free of error, that the person reporting the phenomena is psychologically balanced, honest, and leads a morally upstanding life and is obedient to the church authority. This is a lot to unpack, but let's get your take on it first, and maybe John will call back too. That'd be good.
Maybe it's Mulligan from. No, this is interesting, and again, it hasn't been updated in a while, but it's not public. It's not for the public to read.
That's my question to you. I knew it from, you know, sources, but I've never read a physical document from the Vatican. I'm aware of what practices
right?
go into it. You know, we've had Father Maginot on the show before. Traditional Roman Catholic priest who came forth and said what the rituals and the rites of exorcism is. You remember that? We went over that together, but I've never read a document. About it. So now I don't know how to go about this, but I would like to find a way so I can physically read this. But I can say it's not every day that I can sit here and be like, wow, I'm proud of the Catholic Church for something. Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not, but I'm legitimately proud of them for sticking to their guns on the concept of not going into mass hysteria when it comes to the paranormal. Extremely important to make sure when you're studying a case and before you get, you know, up in arms that you collect all data first and to make sure that there's some sort of psychological baseline put on there as well as making sure the person's okay. I appreciate that. Now, I understand that there's always going to be a caveat saying something like, oh, you know, you got to be a member of the Catholic Church, whatever it might be, or at least, you know, obeying authority, et cetera, et cetera. I get that. But it's interesting to me that all of this that you and I have been covering, especially over the past couple of years, we are now getting an update on the paranormal processes of the Catholic Church in 2024. I did not have that on my bingo list.
No. Now, and with this as well, this is not just for like exorcisms. This is for just,
this is just the study in general.
Altogether. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea how I'd go about this, getting this?
Well, I don't think any. Well, it's got to go out to all the priests, right? Or is it just sticking to the higher-ups, the cardinals?
Who's our cardinal here?
You're right. That's changed, too, over time, right? Well, I know our bishop, McClory, maybe he could.
On the 17th happens, let's see if we can get in touch with this. And if you guys are interested, I'll go over it with everybody and kind of see what's changed. I mean, because if they're doing an update, there's an update.
I'll reach out to the bishop.
Thank you, Count. We appreciate that. All right, but no, I'm interested to see what's next for the Vatican and the paranormal, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even know they were looking that deep. You know, I know there's a whole ruling about exorcisms and everything, but I didn't know they had like rulings for like how to deal with just you know, maybe non-demon like paranormal activity.
Normal vibrational spirit. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it's interesting, especially because when it comes to spiritualism and in the church, I think the Catholic Church kind of has like more of the limelight on it when it comes to, you know, exorcisms and stuff. It's, I don't want to use the term romanticized, but it's really populated by what we have in media, right? You know, you watch The Exorcist, that movie's about a Catholic priest doing an exorcism on, you know, the girl. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at stories like the, help me out here. The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Those are all like Catholic-based faith films, so we have a bigger idea of what exorcisms mean in the face of Catholicism. If you guys are interested in more how other spiritual beliefs handle exorcisms in the paranormal, go check out my episode with the rabbi from a couple years ago on October. It's one of my favorite episodes I've ever done.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys, this is just tough for me. When I sit at home, I have padding all over me, so this is a little different. All right, let's move on to this other article I have, which is hundreds descend on Japanese village to search for legendary cryptid. And they Tim Benall wrote this article using the term cryptid and not yokai, which is, we discussed this last week on the show with the idea of a yokai. But a Japanese village was recently the site of a mass monster hunt as hundreds of people descended upon the community in hopes of catching the legendary cryptid known as the Tsukichunoko. The sizable search reportedly occurred on Friday in the town of Higashiwar Hakawa, which holds an annual festival in celebration of the Parkworld snake-like creature. Said to sport a beer bottle-sized bulge at the center of its body, as well as the ability to speak. The creature became something of a sensation in Japan in the late 80s, following a series of alleged sightings of the oddity in various villages throughout the country. One such community where the festival takes place is supposedly been encountered by witnesses to this day. At this year's festival, a whopping 800 people participated in the annual search, which promises a prize of approximately $8,600 to anyone who can catch the famed creature. It sounds like me and Dr. Ben Vanderson are going to Japan. Alas, despite the considerable number of people looking for the creature, the cryptid managed to... I'm not using the word cryptid. That's not the proper term. The yokai managed to evade capture yet again. Festival attendee Tomoki Amami, who created a documentary on the creature, mused that the appeal of the creature lies in the fact that the true nature is shrouded in mystery, even though there have been many eyewitnesses. To that end, the village is not the only one in Japan to have embraced the curious yokai, as the town of Shimikamiyami has also adopted this creature as something of a mascot in hopes of drawing visitors to the struggling community. I know Count Panic is busy having a conversation with program director Sonny.
I heard some of that, Bob.
Okay, no problem. Cryptid hunt or yokai hunt in Japan at a village.
I'm going to, are you planning to go?
Look, do you want to go? Me and Dr. Ben Vanderson and I will go and we'll find this thing.
I'm not big. Are we big in Japan? I think we're big in Japan. But you know what, Bob? It's what keeps the people... It gives the people something to do at the end of the day, right? They're trying to find this creature, and they're hoping to get some answers. So who are we to say anything, I guess?
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, you ready for our last news article?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Chilean senator reveals astounding alien abduction experience.
Alien
abduction experience from a Chilean senator.
Oh,
Chilean, I believe, really? Is the proper term. Okay. Yeah, so this is like... You know, you have these stories of abductions all the time, all over the world, but you never hear them from a high-ranking official very much. Yeah. But now we have one from a senator from a country, so a big deal, right?
Yeah.
All right. A Chilean senator recently shared an astounding account of being abducted by aliens and then being visited by an individual claiming to be from out of this world. According to a local media report, Karam Bianchi revealed the jaw-dropping experience last week during an interview with the Chilean media outlet. The incident, the center recalled, occurred on the evening back in 2012 as he was driving in the city of Punta Arenas. By the way, guys, I don't speak Spanish or Chilean, so I apologize if I butchered the enunciation there. While speaking to a friend on the phone, the senator was stunned to see a large circular light comprised of different colors in the night sky. His car suddenly shut down, he said, and in a very short time, in a minute, I show up around 100 miles away from the site where he was driving. Reflecting on the moment, the senator mused that he was deeply shaken by what had just occurred, especially since he was alone at night and fearful that something else would happen to him. While the senator made it to his destination without any fear incident that evening, his concerns that the UFO was not quite finished with him were seemingly born out of a few days later when a mysterious stranger visited his office. He told me he was an alien, Bianchi sort of shockingly said, indicating that the bald man gave him photocopies of a magazine that had to do with alien presence. Eerily, the self-described ET told the senator that he would someday reveal his story to the world. Although he described the materials given to him as nothing extraordinary, the senator mused that the meeting made him worry that someone would know about his experience, and he had apparently never told anybody about it. Following those two very strange events, the senator said that he experienced a peculiar series of idiosyncrasy and surviving surrounding owls, which are very rare, which are very often associated with UFOs, aliens, and UAVs, which lasted for around a month. Additionally, the senator observed that the suspected abduction seemingly left him immune with some kind of static energy that caused those that he encountered to feel tired. As one might imagine, the senator's incredible account has created a quite a stir in his county, with some marveling at his experience, while others have ridiculed him or called his question in story into question. In response to the fear surrounding his revelations, the senator said that the truth is not that I don't want to talk about this, but he had grown up fed up with those who cast doubt upon his experience. It's like you're crazy or smoked something or unfit, he laminated, but it's what I lived. So, hashtag panics take.
Yeah, you know, who are we to say and doubt the story, right? Now, some people are calling him crazy, far-fetched, but maybe he did experience this. I don't know for sure. I can't say what he experienced was real or not, but, hey, it's his experience, and it's a pretty fascinating one, if true. You think it's real?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't
it
be?
Who are we to say no?
Who are we? You are completely correct.
That'd be like people saying we're crazy.
I don't discredit people's beliefs. It's just the truth of the matter. I don't question people's experiences. I have to do my, you know, due diligence as an investigator and a reporter to talk to people and get to the bottom of things. I don't consider people crazy. Experiences happen. Now, whether or not the experience was tangible and concrete and not something like psychosis is a whole nother, you know, story. And I'm not a psychiatrist by any means, or somebody that could diagnose. Yeah, I play one on TV. But I, you know, what I'm getting at here is I'm not questioning someone's experience because it was real to them, regardless if it was tangible or real or some sort of hallucination, psychosis, whatever it might be. It was still real to them, and it's worth listening to. And I find it interesting that the senator wound up hundreds of miles away from where he was just a minute later. Nuts.
Yeah. Seems a little freaky to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, there's things that need to be accounted for here. And only he really knows the truth, I guess.
Absolutely. So, Count, you ready to take a quick break?
Sure.
All right. So, to our podcast fans, stick around. You're about to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
This is Mike.
This is Jacob.
And this is Matt.
We are Moth Boys,
a podcast on cryptids, conspiracies, and the unknown. You can catch us every other Monday on, actually, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Thank you.
Oh, hey there, Count Panic. Oh,
hey, Bob.
What did you do during break?
During break, you wouldn't believe it, Bob. I went to Japan.
Oh, what'd you do?
I attended the festival.
That's good. Did you search for the creature?
I searched for the creature.
Any luck?
No luck, Bob. What did you do during break?
You know, I sat back on a beach and I watched a sunset.
You watched a sunset?
I watched a sunset.
Did you chase the sunset?
After chasing sunsets, life's greatest joys, playing with... We have a caller.
We do have a caller.
Caller on the air.
There we go.
Yeah, you want to run that back by me again, Bob, about the apparition.
Oh, hey, John, welcome back. So the Catholic Church, the Vatican, is going to be releasing a new set of guidelines dealing with the paranormal that has not been updated since 1976.
Okay, you know what? Just like anything else in the paranormal world, you either believe or you don't believe. So, you know, Our Lady of Fatima was an apparition.
Right. Which, by the way, happened, the anniversary of that was yesterday or the day before.
Yeah. But, you know, but there's been, you know, Virgin Mary statues, you know, with tears coming down. So, you know, you have a flock of people going to see this. Maybe somebody's seen it, but then again, you don't know. But people believe, and you know, people believe, but they don't, as you know. So, you know, a lot of people, they go and they pray, and, you know, because they really believe that somebody did see a Virgin Mary statue, whether it be in church or whether outside the church, you know, having tears running by. That doesn't mean, it did. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of study, as you know. But I think the Catholic Church bishops are really very, 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 and I can't emphasize that enough, careful on, you know, I don't want to say not believing apparitions, but, you know, for example, I think it was about 15 or 20 years in the harbor section of East Chicago. Mm. I believe the Count might have been there.
Yeah.
There was the face of Jesus Christ on a tree. In the neighborhood.
I remember hearing that from
Dad. So you know what? I was there. I did see it. I didn't see a lot of people seeing the full body, you know, but a lot of people there, they flocked there and they, you know, they prayed, you know, down, whatever, and they believed, you know. So, but I did ask a priest about that and he didn't want to say, you know, he kind of like turned away from me, you know.
Oh, sure.
And I
asked
somebody else about it. And they told me, I asked the deacon in our diocese, and he said that, you know, that the bishops on something like that don't really want to get involved. They don't want the priests to really get involved because, it, you know, it's a, and like you're saying now, you know, Rome's coming up with what, updates, but. Correct? Am I interpreting that right?
Yep. So they're releasing new documents and new protocol when it comes to how to handle these types of things. Because since 1976, the statistic is there's something like 80% more cases that are being brought forward. All of that's due to because, you know, how we receive information.
And I'm not pretending I know everything or I'm not going to say something I don't know, but that's something similar to what I just said, that they're very careful on, you know, telling people, yeah, that, you know, the statue at St. Stanislaus Church was crying or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's where they're coming from, that they're very careful in Rome, too, that, you know, not to get too excited about, you know, you either believe again, I guess, the better way, like the show is about, you know, you either believe in something or you don't. So.
Right, of course. I just find it interesting that we're getting an update. You know what I mean? And from my point of view, I would like to know what changed. Because we're like, you know, when we had Father Maginot here, like I was saying, we had a full breakdown of exactly like what goes into the concept of dealing with something, and I quote, paranormal. So I'm familiar with the rules that are in place now. I'm just interested to know what's changed, and I'm interested to see like how do they go about it, you know, because before, what is it, for an exorcism, a Catholicism exorcism to happen now, isn't it something like 3 psych evaluations before a priest would even show up?
Yeah, it's something like that. You know, I think Father Maginot kind of hit it. Well, he knows, but that'd be interesting to have a Catholic priest on the air, you know, one of these days, if we could get one to explain if they're knowledgeable what the updates are, you know. Well,
the bishop's been on the radio before, but maybe
you know. I wonder how, and you know, I wonder how knowledgeable, you know, the Catholic Church and the, you know, in this world are going to be paying attention to what the updates are. You know, I mean, you broke the news, I guess, but, you know, is it going to be a big thing in the, you know, in the Catholic Church that, hey, this is what we got to really watch out for as far as, you know, if apparition is real or not, or, you know, how to consider it real, or what to tell people if it's real, or that'd be interesting to have, like I said, a priest on the air. Hey, maybe we could work something on that.
I'll see if I can get Father Maginot back, Count.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
John, thank you for calling back in. Because I was hoping, because I'm not well-versed in that, and I know you're a little bit more immersed in it than I am these days. I'm glad you called back and shine a light on that. Thanks, John.
Yeah, but like I said, I'm not no expert either, and I'm not gonna say something I don't know what I'm talking about. So I'm just saying I think they're really very, very careful and how to deal with stuff like that, you know. And it will be interesting to see what the updates are, you know, as far as that's concerned. So, yeah, maybe we'll get them back on the air or some Catholic priest.
You know, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for calling back in, John.
All right, Bob, no problem.
Have a good one.
Yep.
Yeah, I was going to say the bishop, Bishop McClory, has been on the air a couple times during the morning.
I don't think.
This reason.
No, Father Maginot would be our best bet. Father Maginot would be, I don't see that working out in my face. Do we have another caller?
No, it's just me hanging up again.
Good job,
For some
Count.
Reason, it doesn't trigger. But you know what else? I remember that when it happened. I was just a young vampire back then. When in East Chicago, as John was saying, in the harbor, there was two trees, and one you could see, and I saw them too. One you could see the Blessed Mother. The other one you could see Jesus. And, you know, the news outlets were out there. Crowds gathered for days upon days, and they took down the trees because I think it was just too much. But for a moment there, that was just a huge story. Crazy,
right? Yeah. But you know, anywho, so I watched a sunset during my break.
Circle back
now, Count Panic. We're gonna dive into the lore of the week now, okay. Right?
While you do that, I'm gonna get up for a second. I'll be right back.
Where are you going?
I gotta go get something.
All right. I have a whole punchline for you, too.
Oh, wait. We'll do the punchline first.
Hey, Count, what's the opposite of a yes, dear?
Say that again?
What's the opposite of yes, dear?
Yes, dear, no.
Not dear.
No, not dear?
No, not dear.
No, not dear.
Not-D-E-E-R. I've been working on that punchline all day.
That's not bad.
Why do you hate me? Like, go do your thing. Go do your
thing. Be right back.
All right. So, Count Panic is going to be stepping away from the microphone, which means you guys are stuck with me just talking to you one-on-one. This week, I'm Bob After Dark for the Lore of the Week, ripped right from the journals of Dr. Ben Vanderson. We are talking about a piece of Appalachia lore that is so scary, so creepy, and might actually have some tangible proof of existing. So I am, you, as I speak to you guys, and I'm assuming most of my fans know this, and if you don't, let me educate you. Because I'm not from the area, but I did spend time a lot down there as a kid, which is the Appalachia area. And if anybody's familiar with the Appalachia area, is that the Appalachia, so the entire mountain range that stretches, you know, East Coast down into Tennessee, is rooted in deep lore. And there are some, you know, you go talk to them, and folk magic is still widely practiced there as normal as anything. You ever go online on TikTok and you hear about, oh, Meemaw hung up a broom above her door saying that she didn't want any evil coming in her house. That was just normal practice. So folk magic was huge and it still is very much practiced in that neck of the woods. Not to mention the creatures, man. You know, you look at West Virginia and all of that, and we have the Grafton Monster, Mothman, and there are rules. You close all your blinds in Appalachia when you go to sleep at night. You don't whistle in the woods after dark. You don't go, if somebody calls your name when you're out walking through, you know, rural part of the area, no, it ain't. You keep walking by yourself. And there is, it's so interesting to look at Appalachia lore as a whole. When we talk about, you know, Mothman and whatnot, it's considered that, but there's so much more to it. And Not Deer is one of the more famous stories from that region, and I'm excited to be bringing something to you guys about Appalachia lore.
All right.
All right, so our story comes with the Not Deer, and I'm going to be reading this from Sorry, guys, the cryptid wiki here. And that is, the Knot Deer is a creature that is said to inhabit the Appalachian Mountains, with the most sightings being spotted in the state of Tennessee. The Knot Deer, and this is not N-O-T-D-E-A-R, is described as looking like a deer from a distance, but as one gets closer and stares at it longer, something about it is just off. Their movements are described as being like a newborn deer, but appearing as an adult. Some accounts suggest that the creature is double-jointed or has additional limbs attached to its joints. The limbs are described as longer than any of those of a deer or a chest, very barrel-like. The way it moves is said to be aggressive compared to that of a regular deer. The most defining feature, however, is that Knot Deers do not have eyes on the side of their head, but rather the front, like a predator. The distinction is usually the first thing noticed as off. A few accounts involve multiple eyes, though most do not. Other uncommon outliers, too, typically account involve describing the head as bovine. Knot deer are said to not be afraid of humans. Those who encounter them say that they have an uneasy feeling and that there is an intelligence and an emotion about them that furthers the feeling that something is off. The Knot deer will generally approach humans, and it's because of this that the odd movements are noted. Despite encounters feeling off, that the creature has only reported to attack if provoked, such as when an encounter tries to scare them off. Some accounts of such involve being chased up a tree by a Knot deer, and the Knot deer may walk on its hind legs for a bit, as some animals may do, but in order to intimidate or attempt to reach individuals who are chased up trees. The Knot deer accounts are primarily found on Reddit, but attention brought up a lot in recent years to TikTok and other sites. Usually sightings are on roads, such as the case of a car driving alone or on a motorcycle on the Appalachian Road, and seeing in the road what looks like a Knot deer becomes very obviously not a deer as encounters get closer. Knot deer encounters are suggested by skeptics to be encounters with deer who have birth defects causing unusual walking patterns and a head shape. The feelings are reported by those who claim that they have encountered Knot deer are thought to be the result of isolation, sleep deprivation, or other factors. An alternative to the deformed deer explanation is that the encounters stumbled upon deer suffering from early stages of what's called CWD, or chronic wasting disease, aka zombie deer syndrome. CWD is also being suspected as a possible source for modern-day Wendigo sightings, which tend to express a deer skull face. That is complete and utter garbage, but that's another story. In regards to the CWD, the first sign on illness is difficulty in movement. A follow-up sign and change in behavior, which includes listfulness, tremors, and nervousness. Excessive salivation and increased water intake follow. The deer lose their fear of humans and look utterly confused. After this, the wasting begins, and those who favor the explanation of Knot deer suggest that the account of double joints or multiple jointed legs are merely of legs that have lost some internal tissue, allowing the lower leg to swing slightly in either direction. Some suggest that multiple eyes are in a misidentification of open lesions whose exposed fluids reflect light. What do you think so far?
Yeah, Bobby, this is kind of eerie when you bring this up, because all this stuff technically, it sounds like a terrifying creature. But in reality, Bob, when you really think about it, some of the stuff sounds a little bonkers, as you mentioned. Just a tad bonkers.
Yes. Yeah. You know, and the Knot deer has been sighted throughout the centuries, not just in Appalachia, but all over the world, but with a seeming focus on just that area. Each sighting has small differences, but one thing seems to be common. Most people who have seen them say that there's an uncanny intelligence behind their eyes, which are often forward-facing, as we said before. It in many ways, it seems similar to a Native American monster, though without the implications of where it comes from and the taboo around saying the name of it. There are multiple pictures and videos of these creatures, and though many argue they are fake, that remains to be seen. What most pictures show, however, is these not deer eating meat, which is something most deer do not. While they claim that evidence of these creatures have been edited, the truth is that sometimes reality is stranger than fiction. And with so many sightings throughout the U.S. and more into today, maybe it's not so hard to believe. I'm quoting this directly from the EastonTennessee.com. It's a pretty cool read by Elias Murphy. But, it, you know, I... One, if there's... We talk about cryptid sightings, right? And the concept of what's real and what's not real. I believe I'm here to tell you that of all the cryptids I've ever spoke of, other than, you know, my Mothman encounter, I will tell you that I believe 1,000% without a doubt that not deer exist.
You're confirmed. You're saying,
I'm telling you that not deer are so strange. And I have, there are so many odd defects when it comes to birth. I'm 1,000% behind this concept of the disease. But what the articles I've read to you guys don't ever mention is the concept that a lot of these deer, when are found, are decomposing, like as if they're zombies. Well,
I heard the term zombie deer before.
Yeah, and that's what it is. Yeah. I've heard that too, and they're just rotting flesh walking around. Yeah. And we talked about the deer meat virus going around recently, and I kind of referred to the not deer again. Yeah. But it's odd to me that people from all over this region, which is an entire stretch of, you know, the east side of America, take up just... get all these stories. Are you going to tell all of these people that you know, my favorite are people that are saying, well, skepticism, right? Well, you know, deer don't act like that. How are you going to tell people that live in those woods and live around those creatures all the time in their natural habitat? They are going to know better than most people how creatures react.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
I agree with that. You know, if you're in your own community,
you're in a community, if you live in a super rural area, and I'm just going to say West Virginia again, because, you know, central point of high strangeness in the world. If I live in a very rural part of West Virginia and I see deer daily, and if I'm not daily, even nightly, like I'm around them all the time, there are going to be things that you pick up on and that you understand patterns. And, you know, I feed this deer, or I leave out feed, or they mate during this time. It is like clockwork. They don't, you know, typically when an animal does a thing, there might be something that disrupts in the ecosystem that might be a little off, and you might pick up on subtle differences. But what these people are describing for hundreds of years is that these deer are just something else. They specifically are talking about the concept that there's an intelligence behind those eyes that are not supposed to be there.
Hmm. All right, well, again, I mean, I never ran across. I mean, again, it depends. And
there was a sighting not too far away from here.
Terrifying.
Kankakee, Illinois had a sighting of a not deer about 10 years ago.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, just, I guess you see one, right? Just don't alarm it.
You want to avoid it.
Avoid it.
I mean, these things are chasing people up trees. Mm. Look, have you ever been around a wild deer before? Like out in the wild?
Not like a physical deer. I've seen deer out in the wild, of course, but never a hostile deer, I should say. I never encountered a deer that kind of charged at me or anything. They're usually pretty, you know, just kind of, they're kind of skittish, the ones I encountered.
I have been in a situation where I have been with Dr. Ben Vanderson. I've been with him in woods where we've encountered deer, legitimate live deer.
Real deer.
That are, they're pretty docile creatures, man. I've seen them in the wild. Don't get me wrong. You go up to one, they might be a little territorial, but these things are chasing people, and they're, you know, and it, they say deer can get up on their hind legs at times, like bears can get up on their hind legs at times. There's nothing saying that it's not common for them to be sprinting on their hind legs. Yeah. Like some of these cases I have heard about the not deer.
Yeah. It's not normal.
That's not normal. I you know, like I said, when it comes to the idea of these things and what are these things, I don't know what the answer is. Is it a disease that's causing it? Sure. I mean, that's a scientific answer. But how are you going to discredit people for hundreds of years saying that they're seeing these things? And it's just now we're giving the name the not deer. Know what I mean?
I hear what you're saying.
I have an encounter I want to read to you before we wrap it up. So this comes from Reddit, from the Appalachia subreddit. This is a personal account from somebody named Ampersad_.sys. I lived in Waynesboro, Virginia for about 5 years, and less than 10 miles to the BRP North entrance, Skyline Drive South entrance. So this is like typical out there. We're getting to it. I used to take bike rides along the SD all the time and almost kept a year-long membership, only in a day though, just to frame the story. One night, I was having a particularly hard time settling in for bed, so I decided to bike ride up to the first north look on the skyline, only about a mile inside the park. It was about 11 p.m., and when I got there, it was pitch black. I killed the bike and immediately got uncomfortable. I'm not a guy that gets spooked in the dark. Truthfully, I prefer the dark in the most situations, as you could see people before they see you. You are practically invisible unless someone is looking for you. And I find the natural privacy comforting. A lot of people do, by the way. I'm the same way. Not up there, though. It was a thick, oppressive dark, worse than anything I experienced outside a cave, and worse than any moonless night on an Appalachia trail. I immediately got hinked out big time. There's nothing up there besides wildlife, I reassured myself internally, and I had my .44 Magnum revolver from when I lived and hiked in the Pacific Northwest, bear country and all that. That's common for hikers. Tucked into my CCW holster, so I knew I was definitely outmatched with anything that could be up there, two-legged snakes included. So I sat in the dark, leaning against the bike for a while, and looking at the lights I could see in the valley below. I managed about 10 minutes before I physically felt the hair on the back of my neck raise. I only did 27 months in Iraq, but I remember the precise feeling someone was watching me. Something bad was coming. It was the same sensation I would have gotten before an IDF came in or the shooting started somewhere nearby. I'm no psychic or whatever, but it's a common thing among vets with any time under their belt. Ask them about it. You can feel hateful eyes on you. The overlook was a sheer drop, or nearly so, so I wasn't concerned about anything popping up in that direction, but the mountainside and thick untamed woods were behind me. I started thinking about the methed out dudes creeping around the Appalachia Trail, bears and the like. The AT is no stranger to random violence. Still feeling creeped out, I took a seat on the waist-high stone that was well marked over the overlook ledge facing the woods. Again, I can't emphasize how dark it is. But Gris, you might say, which the person I'm assuming goes by Gris, why not turn around the bike and use the lights? It'll help you at least see into what's close, true, but my bike is also loud. And the last thing I wanted was attention. Plus, the light would just night blind me anything out of view anyway, and the noise would obscure any stealthy sounding creeping going on. So no thanks. I'll wait and watch a bit. I sat in the dark for another 10 minutes or so, anxiety getting worse and worse. I heard a few things, but nothing out of the ordinary for the night in the woods. I decided to head on home since the feeling wasn't going away. Like I said, I had a big boar on me, so anything playing games would be in for the powerful surprise if the games got stupid. Hopping onto my Suzuki, I started it up and rode off towards the gate. Now, anyone who lives in the country and rides a bike knows that wildlife is crazy active on roads that aren't traveled often at night. Being nighttime and technically closed, I had to ride around the gate to get in. There were no other vehicles on the road at all. I hadn't seen a single person since leaving Waynesboro proper. The speed limit was 30, but I was clipping along a measly 15 miles per hour to keep an eye out for deer and wildlife. It wouldn't do me any good to screw myself up in a wreck, only to lay here all night until someone happened across me in the morning. Then I saw it. The term of not deer is really fitting, but not quite accurate. It was like the deer that someone who had never seen a deer drew, but only after someone described it to them. It stood on its left side of the road, on the mountain side, and I saw the eyes before my headlights shone it fully. It was big, easily the biggest deer I've ever seen, and the lack of any horns that time in the year suggested it was a doe. The head was almost bovine in shape, but fixed to the deer's frame. The legs seemed too long in proportion to the body, and think Maine wolf proportions, and the body was extremely barrel-chested. I've always been creeped out by malformed wildlife, and this was no exception. Unfortunately, I had to get it to move or risk passing within a few feet of it. I was not traveling another 30-plus miles up in the road in another direction to leave through another gate in the middle of the night. And I wasn't getting close to it. Dangers of it spooking and running into the side of my cruiser aside, I didn't want to get near it at all. Stepping and putting my foot down about 30 feet away from it, it tried to frighten it away. I flashed my beams down to a low and back to high. Nothing. I revved the engine. Nothing. I honked the considerable horn. Nada. Resting the bike on the kickstand, I left it idling and hopped off. I yelled at the thing and it still wouldn't budge. So I started to the side of the road to grab something to toss near the deer, hoping just to spook it away. As soon as I crossed the other lane, it rose on its hind legs. I froze, putting my hand on my gun. I wasn't about to get charged by any angry, confused, malformed doe. It took two jerky, unnatural steps towards the center of the lane on the two legs and froze again, staring directly at me. It suddenly shook its head wildly like a dog with a toy and took another short step, then hopped on two legs several times until it disappeared into the darkness on the right side of the road. I stepped on the bike, mounted it, kicked up the kickstand, turned the light towards the side of the road. On that night, there was a sheer drop off about 75, 80 degrees compared to the road race, and the thing's head was just peeking over the edge looking at me. Fair. The drop off was about 40 or 50 feet, so there's no way it was standing on the base of the mountainside. I cracked the throttle and beat the heck out of there. Road wildlife be damned. I never went back up on the Skyline Drive alone at night after that. One time was enough. There are things we don't gronk out there, or things that we just visit for a while. Whatever it was, it wasn't around these parts in Hilltalk. It can go back wherever it came from and stay there. By the way, Gris is the road name of this person, and this was originally posted to his social media, and he wanted to share that story. I read this a couple times because obviously I needed, there's swearing in there, so I had to prepare myself for it. I have the hair standing up on my arm just as much as I did when I first read it earlier when I was doing my research for this. That is nuts.
That's crazy.
Don't get me wrong. I'm all there for people, right? I get it. You know, this is probably an easily explainable entity. Maybe it's got some sort of weird developmental disease, but it is an odd, odd thing. Can't we have somebody who trying to call? They said they were calling in and it just kept ringing.
Try it. 219-845-1100.
219-845. 1-1.
That's the correct number.
0-0. So anywho, I don't know, man. That is an interesting, strange, bizarre case of the somethings.
Makes you say, oh dear.
Badoots.
Well, I hope I never run across a zombie deer, Bob.
I don't either. But here's the thing, right? I can't argue with this. You know, there's times I want to sit here and give you a skeptical point of view on things. I don't know. It's such a bizarre tale. And I don't know where to go with that.
Yeah.
The not deer.
The not deer.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with the yes deer.
So what's your take on it?
You know, and this is very believable because, I mean, there's been news stories about, I mean, this is a thing we could really put our faith, I don't want to say put our faith in. This is something we know is real, right? The not deer, the zombie deer.
There's the disease that call it the zombie deer. So we are aware that this disease exists. But is it causing these deers to do that?
I mean, who knows? I mean, anything is really possible with these deers. But now a group of them would be one is enough. But imagine having what's a group of deer called?
A herd, right?
A herd of deer.
Yeah.
A herd of these not deers just staring you down. I mean, that'd be terrifying.
I'm good, man.
I never can. Are you supposed to confront deers in general? I don't. They're kind
of. I've seen them. Like I said, I've come face to face with them out in like being with Dr. Banerson. I've been with them. I've seen them face to face. They're kind of docile. You know, they ain't going to come and attack you. They're more weirded out by you than you are of it.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. It's mating season and a giant buck comes after you. That's a different story. Yeah. That's never happened to me. But jumping on its hind legs and hopping on it. That's weird, man. That's just straight up strange.
Yeah, I always watch out on the road too.
Absolutely.
Pop out.
I want to point out there are things about that story that don't seem fabricated. Those are the types of encounters I want to hear about. You know, you hear about these stories. Oh, it chased after me. However, the way this person presented their experience seems so genuine. Because they were afraid too. And this person had war experience and was trying to put forth some sort of tactical mindset to this. And if it wasn't for that tactical mindset, who knows what could have happened to him?
Yeah. No, who knows?
Exactly. Mm. I'll tell you, Appalachia lore is nothing to be messed with.
No.
And I truly believe that there are things going out there that I can barely even talk about on the show. Guaranteed.
No, I know. We gotta be careful.
So, do you have any closing words for the audience?
Closing words is be careful for the deer out there. If you're in the woods, watch out for them, and they'll hopefully watch out for you. So, yeah. My words of advice.
Folks, thank you for letting me be in your homes on the radio wave on Tuesday nights. Thank you for giving me that opportunity. I am still going to be here on Jed TV. Reach out to WJOB, if you need help connecting to Jed TV, there will be somebody here to help you. I am stressing that to you. I am telling you to do that because I don't want to lose you folk as my live audience. You can always catch the show syndicated. We're working on the finalizing date, but if you're used to listening to me live, we're going to walk you through it so you can be able to listen live still too.
And we hope to have the next week. We'll still be here Tuesday, I believe. There's no baseball doesn't start till the following week. So we'll hope to have a concrete update for everybody out there.
Absolutely. But I really appreciate all of you guys being here with me. And so I just want to say my goodnights. To Mom, I just want to wish you a good night. To Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy, comfortable, and doing whatever it is that you want to be doing. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody, and remember the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below, until next time.
Memoriam Development.